You are listening to the serialized audiobook podcast for Blood of the Stars, an epic fantasy novel written by Corinne Norton, read by Peter Franson and Corinne Norton. If you can't wait to listen to the whole audiobook, or if you want a signed physical copy, go to corinnenorton.com/shop to get the lowest cost by buying direct. You can also find the audiobook on Audible, Barnes & Noble, and other standard retailers. Please enjoy the next installment of Blood of the Stars by Corinne Norton. Chapter 9. Aura kneeled, her face a hand's breadth from the woman called Della. She wouldn't be on this world much longer, but at least Eliana had used the arrow. She'd brought it to Vendaris. It was finally where Aura could reach it. Della was scrunched up in such agony that Aura felt her own muscles tense. Aura held out a hand, itching to ease the woman's pain, to heal her, or even just numb her. But Aura's hand was a mere wisp of shadow and light. There was nothing she could do with her physical body hundreds of miles away. Instead, she sang. She started out low, more of a hum. Della's cries turned to whimpers. Her eyes latched on to Aura's, as if drawing strength from the melody. The pure tone held the sorrow of a thousand lifetimes, the joys of hundreds more. A man rushed into the atrium, the panic on his wrinkled face, tightening Aura's gut. Not a bondmate in the traditional Vendaran sense, but threads of love tied their souls all the same. He dropped to Della's side, hands clasping hers. The motion brought the woman out of the near stupor she'd been in as she listened, her pain resurfacing, even as Aura sensed the comfort brought by the man's presence. Aura picked up the pace of her song, engulfing them both. The man held Della, careful not to aggravate her wounds, tears streaming into his white beard as he whispered words only for her. Aura wished to comfort them both, to wrap her arms around them and infuse them with love and hope beyond this lifetime. The limitations of this form left her agitated, and her volume increased until the man winced. She cut off her song, the silence that followed bringing the woman's eyes open a mere slit. "Do you see the light of the sun?" Aura asked. The woman's whimper gave no indication of an answer. The man stroked her brow, his lips moving, the sound too low for human ears. But Aura heard the prayer, guiding the woman to the stars. "Look to the sun," she told the woman. "Do you see its light? It will hurt, even more than it already does. It hurts to look upon the sun's brilliance." The woman's eyes were unfocused, her gaze resting somewhere behind Aura. Aura imagined the woman's view beyond this earth, to the sun's presence on the other side. Aura longed for it in a way that left her weak, vulnerable to losing her hold on this place. She sucked in a breath, focusing on the frail humans around her, the wooden benches and stone walls. "The sun will draw you into its presence, give you greater life than the one you've known. May the sun ever shine upon you." her voice caught, as she forced the words to be for the woman, and not for herself. No matter how much she desired these truths to be her own, this moment was for the human. May you never lose its light. Della's breathing slowed, the muscles on her face relaxing. The man's breath hitched as her lips lifted, her gaze still focused beyond Aura. When she took her last breath, the entire room paused with her. The life left her body, her pain along with it. Aura's shoulders slumped. Now the woman was safe. The woman had what Aura could not obtain. The hold Aura had on this place disintegrated, her light bursting out around her as her essence was pulled back across the water and through the mangrove trees.
Chapter 10. Garen had just reached the swamps when the light came, shooting from the distant west toward the southern provinces. He froze, allowing the matching memory to saturate his entire being. That hadn't been the light of a starlock being delivered from the stars or retrieved from Ristan. He'd seen this light only once before, 14 years ago. He climbed the nearest tree, reaching for his starlock's power to imbue himself with strength and speed. Then, willing the memory of the light to remain, he tuned in to its source. With his bird's eye view, the most he could see of the light's memory was a silvery fog extending down the western coast of Vendaris. If someone had used the Starbridge, that was where they'd ended up. But how far exactly? His need to set sail intensified tenfold. He scrambled back to the ground and had made it 100 paces toward the palace when he remembered the book. It was the reason he'd headed for his hideout in the first place, and he couldn't leave it behind. Eagerness made Garen reckless, so he was only 10 feet from the right grove of trees before he finally tuned in to his surroundings. He sensed the same strange magic, absent of memories, that he'd noticed the last time he'd been out here. Removing his dagger, he slowed his pace, nearly choking on the swamp gas stench, but unable to escape to higher ground with cleaner air. Not until he knew what awaited him. He took a cautious step forward, preferring to climb the crude ladder one-handed than release his hold on his dagger. His starlock warmed against his skin as if preparing to enhance his magic. A peek over the boards revealed a woman slumped over his desk, her body too still. He tuned in to his surroundings, wary of a trap, and yet she didn't breathe. He hopped onto the landing and took a step closer. Who was she? Why was she here? And what in Ristan would he do with a dead body? As he scooted closer, debating his options, she gasped in a deep breath, her light brown skin taking on a glow that infused her body with life. Painful life, if the tightness of her features was any indication. The light faded, and she attempted to straighten, dark strands of hair hanging in her face. She doubled over the desk once more as if she might be sick. "Sun's fire," Garen murmured, reaching out a hand to steady her. She lifted her head, eyes slitted with her discomfort as she tried to focus on him.
"Help me."
The pitiful request snapped Garen into motion. Intruder or not, he wasn't about to let her suffer. He reached for his water skin, holding it out as a peace offering.
"I'm sorry, I can't heal you. I'm not a somatic progeny. But I have water."
When she didn't move, he slowly lifted the flap, then tipped the skin forward as she tilted her head back. As she drank, he automatically scanned her neck for the cord of a starlock, but there was none. Her vulnerability confused him after he'd watched her still form, frozen as if dead, be saturated with light and life. There was no other way to explain it. Her body had been temporarily lifeless, and then her soul had returned. The light. It was too coincidental that her strange magic had brought her to life just after the light he'd seen as a child. Did she know something about the Starbridge?
"Bamboo Island," the woman croaked out once she'd had her fill.
Garen stood a little taller. The small island was one of many stops he made along the western coast of Vindaris. It wasn't as far as Valorian or Lover's Falls, and it had been handwritten in the Sins of the Stars. He squinted toward the southern provinces, mapping out the trajectory of the light he'd seen. It could have gone to Bamboo Island.
"Is Bamboo Island where the light went?" he asked.
She nodded, licking her lips.
Can you get me there?"
The desperate request gave him certainty. She wanted to find the Starbridge just as much as he did.
"Who are you?" he asked.
Underneath a faded cloak, she wore a simple wool dress, unlike the silky layers of the nobility, but also unlike the trousers of the commoners. Her short hair hung loose, her wrists empty of jewelry except for a strange braid of tawny hair. But her hands and face didn't hold the rough wear of a working woman.
"Aura,
where did you come from? And how did you come back to life?"
"I wasn't dead. It nearly killed me, but it didn't."
She glanced away, her eyes flashing with pain.
"I won't do it again."
It wasn't an answer, but it might be all he was going to get right now. He had every intention of tracing down that light. It didn't matter if it went to Bamboo Island or all the way to Andel. Dragging this woman along might slow him down, but if they had goals that aligned, if she knew more than he did. "What will we find there?" She closed her eyes, exhaustion lining every feature on her face.
"The things we seek."
He frowned, her answer putting him on edge. "How do you know what I'm looking for?" She gestured to his books without opening her eyes.
"Your research. You may have tried to keep it quiet, but word gets around."
The words sent a chill down his back.
"It's a good thing,"
she reassured him.
"We can help each other."
"So we're looking for the same thing?" He wasn't going to name it if she wasn't. The thought felt petty, like a game he and Riverin might have played as children, but it also felt prudent. She grunted, maybe a laugh that her body didn't have enough energy to produce.
"You can't possibly be looking for the same thing as me."
Coughing spasms racked her body, and he offered her water again. She trusted him with her frail body, but not with her knowledge, which meant she knew too much or too little. He reached out, tuning into her mind, attempting to find a memory that could give him a sense of whether he could trust her. But her mind was blank, her memories blocked so thoroughly it was like she had none.
"What is it you think the light meant?"
she finally asked. They stared each other down for a few moments. He should be skeptical of a stranger, but her magic outstripped his by miles. She wasn't a simple thief or squatter, which meant he needed to find out what all she knew. Finally, Garen threw caution to the wind. "Someone used a Starbridge." She looked away.
"Perhaps. Or perhaps it means more."
Her words stirred hope he hadn't realized he'd been guarding. "But you're saying that's part of it, that someone came across the barrier?"
"Four someones."
Her eyes rolled in her head, as if she might pass out. Even so, the hope in Garen's chest grew, blossoming into something big and fragile, making him feel far too vulnerable.
"Who?
Humans? Half-lights?" He leaned forward, supporting her even as he wanted to shake the answer out of her.
"Two beasts using blood magic. A young woman named Eliana."
He sucked in a breath, nearly dropping her as she slumped against him. "Daisy."
"Ah, perhaps I was wrong about what you seek."
The woman's eyes fluttered open, her head lolling back so she could look at him.
"A someone is a far more motivating goal than a something."
Daisy was back. The idea flipped all of his plans on their head. He no longer needed to cross the barrier. He simply had to find her. except he'd been there when her mother sent her across the barrier for her protection. He'd seen the couple Aura referenced, the ones who used blood magic. He'd always suspected and feared they'd been too powerful for Daisy's father to keep her safe. If the people using blood magic had brought her back, that wasn't good. Because something or someone on this side of the barrier was even more dangerous for Daisy. Suddenly, the questions surrounding Aura didn't matter. If she could help him find Daisy, he could put up with her mysterious magic and presence. "I'll take you." He helped Aura into his hammock as her eyes closed. When his hands brushed her skin, he tuned in to her soul, fumbling with his less developed skill along the pneumatic spoke. Few progenies developed a second spoke. With all of Garen's and Enla's mentors' training combined with their high concentration of starblood, the royal siblings each had one. Still, neither of them had developed their second spoke enough to consistently use it. Someday it would give them access to the elemental magic on the rim of the Wheel of Magic. For now, it was more like a trick they could occasionally pull out. Garen's Starlock burned with the effort to discern if Aura was lying, but he sensed nothing. Either his second spoke was too underdeveloped, or the mental wall she'd erected was too difficult to breach. The woman's hand gripped his arm, her nails digging in until Garen winced.
"Don't ever try that again."
I was just trying to help you." Not exactly a lie. If he trusted her more, he'd be more likely to help her. She relaxed her grip.
"Take me to the island. That's the only thing I need from you."
Her eyes closed, and her hand fell back in her lap, her body limp. He couldn't just leave her here, unguarded and half dead. He stared at her a moment longer in indecision, then pulled the desk closer so his water skin would be within reach. He patted down his pockets, pulling out some of the honey bars Enla insisted he keep on him. They weren't much better than hardtack, but they'd saved him from hunger on more than one occasion when he avoided socializing with nobility. Her eyes darted beneath her lids, but it didn't seem like a restful sleep. What if she was sick? He reached out a tentative hand, placing it on her forehead. The same instant, her hand circled his wrist and her eyes flew open, the warm tone of her skin carrying that eerie glow.
"Don't touch me. I only need you to get me to Bamboo Island. Nothing else. I'll be fine by the sun's peak."
He lifted his hands in surrender, stepping back and straightening to his full height. It went against everything in his nature to leave a woman alone, injured. But if that was what she wanted. Besides, he needed to get moving if he had any hope of bumping up their departure. Larkos had done well finding a crew on such short notice, but he'd been expecting 3 more days to secure stragglers and supplies. Somehow, they'd have to get out of here tomorrow. Well, tomorrow night. They'd still have to leave in the middle of the night to avoid Enla's wrath. He swore under his breath. His parents had made a lot of foolish decisions lately. Giving his sister increasing authority was not one of them, but placing him under that authority as the future throne warden? It was like they wanted a family feud. Unless Enla might agree now that the circumstances had changed. Now that he'd seen the flash of light and met this woman. Both carried unknown magic, and any unknown power was a potential threat to the throne. "Stay here," he told the woman's still form. "I'll come back for you when I have things ready." Her fingers lifted in acknowledgement.
"Thank you, Garen."
He paused at the use of his name, which he'd never given. The question hung on his lips for a moment, but then her breathing shifted as if she already slept.
Chapter 11. Aeliana's stomach churned after the transition from solid earth to emptiness, back to solid earth. She reached out, grasping only empty air, unsure which way was up or down. She lost her grip on the arrow, uncertain if Arvid or Vera ended up with it. Her eyes attempted to adjust to the lack of light. An awareness of her surroundings trickled in like her senses were being awakened one by one. Muggy, stale air with a hint of sea salt filled her nose and drenched her in sweat. Her cloak became suffocating instead of warm and protective. Dense foliage lay before them, with wooden shoots poking out from a carpet of moss. A fresh ocean breeze, still almost too thick and wet to breathe, provided a brief respite from the heat. To her front and sides, a forest of unfamiliar hardwood trees mixed with bamboo came alive with exotic bird calls. Strange vines twitched as unseen creatures moved through them, and leaves and moss carpeted the ground. To her back, beyond a cliff's edge, water stretched on as far as she could see, which meant little with the full moon barely visible between clouds in the night sky. The soothing and rhythmic flow of waves contrasted with the light sobs escaping Cyrus, who dropped to his knees. She bent down, rubbing his back, her throat clogging with tears she felt unworthy to shed. He shrank away from her touch, further magnifying her own anguish, the wall between them now as impenetrable as the barriers, which they'd now breached. "About time," Arvid muttered. He yanked on Aeliana, forcing her to stand in front of him. "Remember our annual test?" Aeliana shuddered, but held still. If she fought him, it would only take longer. "You told me it was to check the quality of my blood." He pulled back her cloak and tore at the collar of her blouse, exposing the top half of her back.
"I don't suppose you'll believe that anymore."
"I never did." The breeze on her sweat-soaked skin made her shiver. Sharp pain followed as Arvid carved into her skin, sending waves of heat through her torso. She pulled away, but her blood still covered his hands, her own energy holding her prisoner as he finished his task. In the past, he'd left it there for a day, sometimes more, until she cried out in pain as her magic carved a second mark. She'd tried countless times to see what marked her back, but he placed them strategically where her eyes couldn't reach. After the second mark came, he always claimed she was holding out on them, threatening to take more blood if she didn't behave. Then he removed the marks until the following year.
"What are the marks really for?" she asked through ground teeth, but neither of her guardians answered.
"Gams!"
Cyrus's tortured voice brought Aeliana fresh grief.
"Hush!"
Vera jabbed him in the side with the toe of her boot, but her eyes scanned the skies.
"You killed her! She would never hurt anyone, and you killed her."
Cyrus's voice grew louder, his words too frantic to be directed at any one person. Still, Aeliana felt each one aimed at her heart.
"What don't you understand about being quiet?" Vera hissed,
her attention shifting to the surrounding forest. Arvid finished his handiwork and stepped to Aeliana's left, eyes narrowed as his focus intensified between two trees. He rubbed his hands together, the congealed blood covering them still far too potent. The air around him practically hummed with the energy of it, but this time he held back, waiting for the right moment. The change in tactic left Aeliana more wary than when he used the magic freely. She took a step away, gingerly letting her shirt and cloak fall against her back, even though it stung. She'd need to leave it open to the air that night
so it could scab over. Whenever Arvid had to treat it for infection, he blamed her. Cyrus wiped his cheeks and stood, eyes blazing even through his grief. Before Eliana could question his fresh determination, a blinding light exploded, bringing them all to a crouch. It held more color and heat than Aura's light, and the scent of singed fabric and hair lingered in the air even as the heat receded. It had come from the space Arvid studied. There was something else out there. Arvid grunted, and as Eliana's vision normalized, the sight of charred flesh on his arm made her stomach turn. Despite his earlier rejection, Cyrus pushed Eliana behind him, protecting her from the new threat, just as Vera reached out a hand. Instead of finding Eliana's arm, Vera trapped Cyrus in her iron grip. Undeterred, Vera pulled out a knife, slicing Cyrus on the palm. The heat of Eliana's wound flared, then sent a cold bite sliding down her spine. The sight of his blood spilling was like a deadly omen. "You can't even use his blood!" Cyrus's howl nearly drowned out her panicked words. The knife shifted dangerously close to his neck, while the flow of blood poured uselessly from his hand to the moss as he squirmed and groaned. "Maybe not, but if I slice a little deeper, a little higher, he won't have much use for it either," Vera said. "But if you give me some of yours, I can use it to heal him. Blood for blood." Eliana bit her lip in consideration. Vera wouldn't heal him, but she might trade Cyrus for Eliana's blood. Cyrus's eyes begged her to respond, but she wasn't sure which answer he wanted her to give. He squeezed his good hand over the injured palm, applying pressure to lessen the flow. Arvid took several steps toward the tree line, leaving Vera to deal with Cyrus and Eliana, while he dealt with whatever was in the woods. He roared, releasing his own rush of heat and fire, the blood on his hands like oil fueling flames. Eliana had never seen him use magic so openly, the wildness of it terrifying and limitless. Even when he had welcomed the dark spirits, letting them fuse with his body, it had been done surreptitiously. But here, he had no reason to hide. A figure emerged from the forest line, lit up but unharmed by Arvid's fire.
"Silmar," Arvid hissed.
The other man, Silmar, had graying hair and a short beard, and he gripped an intricately carved staff. He appeared more beast than man, the deep scars covering his face and arms like gouges cut from a craggy mountain, far different from the snake-like lines marring her palms. As he held out the staff, his gaze watched for Arvid's next move. Now Eliana knew why Vera wanted the blood trade, why she needed it now more than ever before. They'd left all their stores of her blood back in Lorvandus. They were running out, which meant Arvid's magic wasn't as limitless as it seemed. Understanding flashed on Cyrus's face as well.
"Run," Cyrus whispered,
waving Eliana on toward the tree line, distracting her from the tense words Arvid and Silmar exchanged. Cyrus gasped as small drops of blood beaded down into his collar from the knife cutting his skin.
"If you run, he dies."
The cold truth in Vera's voice made Eliana shiver. Silmar adjusted his staff, using it more like a cane as he drew closer, his stance appearing too vulnerable to be the source of the sparks she'd first seen. A deep belly laugh rose from his throat, leaving Eliana pained that the old man must be oblivious to the threat flowing in her veins. She wanted to warn him away. He was no match for Arvid.
"Surely you knew I'd come."
Silmar's words came out raspy, like his insides held the same scars as his face and hands.
"Where's Rildon?"
"In the deep."
Eliana's heart dropped to her stomach. Had Della's story been right? Had her father left the arrow for her and died because of it? Arvid widened his stance, elbows out, bouncing on his heels as if ready to pounce. Silmar made no move to defend himself or prepare for his own attack.
"You never were a good liar."
Arvid scanned the skies, making everyone else glance up as well. The dark spirits couldn't follow them here, could they? If he gave control over to one, the battle would be finished before it had begun.
"Gone for 14 years, and you're still doing her bidding?"
Silmar's taunt was like the flick of a switch. Arvid's body tensed, the blood on his hands nearly glowing in the moonlight, as if to remind the enemy he hadn't completely used up his stores.
"Mavis rewards her faithful servants."
Sparks erupted from Silmar's staff, which then shifted its shape to a sword. Arvid began throwing flames instead of words once more, and stray sparks grazed Cyrus and Vera. The brunt of it smoked Cyrus's arm, and he screamed, taking Vera's focus off Eliana. Still, her hold on the knife remained steady on Cyrus, his life held in her unpredictable hands.
"Time's up,"
Vera said, using her free hand to toss a glass bottle at Eliana's feet, where it bounced in the moss.
"Just one more bottle, then we'll leave you two to survive the jungles of Vendaris."
"I'm not worth it." Cyrus winced as Vera adjusted her grip on the knife. They would get her blood either way. They always did. But at least she could save his life. She bent to retrieve the glass bottle, then eyed his wound, still seeping despite the pressure. Hopefully, she could still save him. Vera pulled a second knife from her boot, tossing it in Eliana's direction. The decision felt wrong. There was a reason they wanted her blood, and it couldn't be good. But nothing was more valuable than a life, and the life in front of her was the life she could save right now. Eliana yanked the stopper from the bottle with renewed purpose. She couldn't watch Cyrus die, not when she could do something about it. She picked up the knife and sliced the skin of her palm, letting the blood fill the tiny jar. It was nothing compared to the blood they'd taken in the past. She dropped to her knees, and the muggy air turned chilly, goosebumps rising on her flesh. A sense of euphoria mixed with shame flooded through her as a desire grew to spill more blood even once the bottle was full. Green shoots rose from the ground, and her eyelids fluttered, her mind losing control over her body. The power of her blood filled her, taking over her senses. The urge to give in to the blood's demands hit harder than ever before, as if freely giving it made it stronger than when it was forcibly taken. The only thing that brought her back to her senses was Cyrus's mournful cry. She stoppered the jar, then pressed the wound hard against her thigh, standing and stomping out the daisies that had grown. Her breath came out ragged, her muscles limp like she'd run to Galdric Valley and back. A dark shadow flitted across the sky, black against the moon's light. Maybe the dark spirits could cross the barrier.
Or maybe these were different dark spirits, unique to Vendaris.
Now let him go,
she demanded, her voice almost as hoarse as Silmar's.
Give me the blood first.
When Vera held out her hand, the edge of the golden arrow peeked out from inside her cloak. For a moment, Aeliana wanted to barter for that as well, but it was too risky. She reached back and flung the bottle high above Vera. Vera pushed Cyrus out of her way as she lunged for the blood. Aeliana reached for Cyrus to stop his fall, but he pulled her down with him, the moss breaking their fall, even as tiny bamboo shoots dug into their backs. For a moment, she let herself feel the crash of anxiety and relief, and she leaned over to bury her face in his shirt. Sweet stars, she hoped she'd made the right choice.
Why would you do that?
The frustration in Cyrus's voice was softened by his arm wrapping around her.
Gams sacrificed herself for you to escape them. She told me to protect you, not the other way around.
He had every right to question Aeliana, but she had no answer. The plain stars above twinkled in the sky, and the heavenly stars did their dance, as if unaware of, or maybe uninterested in, what took place in this tiny clearing. Vera ignored them as she cradled the vial of blood in her hands, and Silmar and Arvid were locked in battle, sparks and fire flying as they danced in and out of the other's reach, both surprisingly spry.
Come on, let's go,
Aeliana whispered, rolling away from Cyrus. They crept through the brush, and Aeliana was thankful for the return of shouts and flames, which drew attention away from their escape. Another distant glow of fire shone at their backs, briefly lighting up the night and forest before them. It revealed a lanky man with black hair sheared close to his head. Aeliana gasped, and Cyrus tripped, falling to his knees. The stranger leaned against a set of particularly thick vines a dozen feet away.
Where do you two think you're going?
His voice was smooth, like a storyteller's polished timbre. A lazy grin split his face.
Honestly, I leave Silmar alone for mere moments, and he gets himself into all sorts of trouble. I'm gonna enjoy holding this over his head for years to come.
He pushed off the vines and ambled their way, his manner easy and unthreatening. Still, Aeliana backed away, tugging Cyrus with her. If the stranger was with Silmar, he probably didn't intend to kill them, but that could just mean they wanted her alive for something far worse. Striking blue eyes stood out from laugh lines, even in the low light. Fish hooks hung from his ears, and despite the rebellious tilt to his smile, he seemed old enough to be her father. His tight breeches and simple vest over a bare chest and deep brown skin seemed more suited to a sailor. When he clapped a hand on Aeliana's shoulder, water immediately soaked through her cloak and tunic, and he removed his hand with a suction noise.
The name's Veldon, but I should really go help our friend before we finish introductions. He might come in handy someday.
His words held a soft lilt, like his consonants were lighter and his vowels longer. Even Silmar's throaty rasp had held the same strange enunciations. It was a tiny difference, but Aeliana realized if Arvid's and Vera's voices hadn't been so harsh and overbearing, she might have caught the hint of an old accent, further proof that she'd been brought from this foreign land. Cyrus struggled to rise with his injured arm, and the man held out webbed fingers, easily pulling Cyrus to his feet. A slimy, wet residue clung between their hands as the man let go. Cyrus made a face and rubbed his hand on his cloak.
Thanks. Before Veldin could run off, Silmar hobbled their way, leaning on his staff far heavier than he had when he'd first arrived. Aeliana tensed, peering around him for her guardians to follow, but for now, he came alone.
Where in Rhistaun did you go?
Silmar's rasp made Aeliana's skin crawl. He drew closer, his glare resting on Veldin.
The one night I truly need you, you're nowhere to be found.
Ah, so you do like having me around. Veldin beamed at him. I'm never sure with all your grumbling. Kendallin Stew didn't agree much with me. He made a face and rubbed his belly.
Oh, for the sun's fire, Silmar muttered. Just lead the way back to camp.
Of course, wise one. Veldin's low bow matched the drip of sarcasm in his tone. What about Arvid and Vera? Aeliana asked.
They gave up after you left, rushed for the valley.
Silmar's furious glare didn't fade.
But who knows what kind of reinforcements they have?
They just left? Aeliana frowned, her gaze still scanning the forest behind Silmar. She supposed that was what Vera had said she'd do if she got Aeliana's blood. But it wasn't like them.
Probably to get help,
Silmar reiterated. It made sense, but it still seemed too easy.
Come on,
Veldin called as he wound his way deeper into the forest. Silmar gestured for Aeliana and Cyrus to follow.
You want us to go with you?
Cyrus asked, hunching over his injured arm. Veldin turned, his amusement contrasting Silmar's impatience.
Of course,
Silmar said.
You're the reason we came here,
Veldin added, his gaze resting on Aeliana.
I hope you enjoyed listening to the latest installment of Blood of the Stars by Corinne Norton. If you enjoy listening to this narration, you might also enjoy listening to Pater's podcast, Christian Geek Central, where he discusses movies, video games, and all things enjoyed by self-proclaimed geeks from a Christian worldview. Thanks so much for listening.